Blog Talk Radio.
Monkey Man by the Rolling Stones off of Let It Bleed. I don't think we needed to hear Mick Jagger bark for about 14 minutes at the end. But anyways, this is your mother's medicine cabinet, and I'm your host, Frank Reardon. And we are brought to you by the Literary Underground and all those 800 people or so. We're waiting for the guest. Let's explain what's going on. Tonight will be the last show of the year because the next Monday will be Christmas Eve and the Monday after will be New Year's Eve, and I'm not going to do poetry shows on holidays, so I'll be doing other shit like drinking spiked eggnog or whatever that might be and whatever those holidays entail. So anyways, our guest when we return on January 7th after tonight will be Zarina Zabriskie, and that will bring us, that'll be the first guest in the final 3 months of the show. Because when the show's over, my life as a radio host is all but over. I feel like I've done it for, it'll be a year, and I've had enough. But we're waiting for Amanda Joy to call in, so, yeah, when she calls in, she's from Australia. I've known her since way back. 6, 7, 8 years. Seems like a long time. I think I was a young whippersnapper when I met her. But Never met her personally, but, you know, she lives in Perth, Australia, so I can't really get out to Australia all the time. But, yeah, so, anyways, oh, hold on, I got her in an email here. Let me get here. Hold on a moment. Anyhow, I'm just emailing her. She's having trouble calling in here. She's having trouble calling in here, so it'll probably take a few minutes. But yeah, our next guest will be Zarina. And I kind of forget how it goes after that. But anyways, there's a message. We have, like, Facebook pages and Literary Underground pages and... And it says all the guests and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. She's having trouble calling in, so I'm not really good at the dead air thing, talking. So, we're waiting for her to call in. You know, somebody else would like to call in, because there's other shows that the Literary Underground does, and I don't know any of these, like, music song, so I can't play any, like, music while we're waiting for her to call. Oh, see, I got another one. She says to give her a minute and read a poem. I don't know. Let me see what I've got over here in the stack of books. I don't think I want to read one of my poems. I have a book coming out, so I'm going to selfishly promote. In a couple of days, or tomorrow, my new release, The Nirvana Haymaker, comes out from Neo Poesis Press, and it will be released for internet sales in a couple of weeks, in a day or two, and I'll be at neopoesis.com, amazon.com, Barnes & Nobles, other booksellers that, you know, anybody can order it these days with this wide world web, and I have a few signed copies left, and you can contact me, but, you know, they're the past few hours have been pretty selling pretty well, so, you know, this is my first large book release in nearly 3 years. I've been kind of just banging out a couple of books for the past 3 years, kind of hiding out up here in the snowy landscape where I live. But let's see, I don't know, here's a poem. It's called The 47th Chorus. Where is Italy? How can I find it in my mind? If my mind is endless, skulls on the slave market, blacksmiths, doctors, I end up bleakly giggling in Gleek Romany rooms, sliced by Sardinian fiends and shot full of morphine. My sadistic doctors that didn't dream of Japan with me the night I dreamed of the Japanese boy with black bull cap sitting on a wall on Kamikaze Boulevard near the sea's hurricane in low, gloomy, dark dust of war, 1943. What happened in Italy? That was a Jack Kerouac poem. In the Mexico City Blues, 242 choruses. She told me to read a poem, so I read one. But I had a book in front of me. But she's... I don't know if Australia is giving her troubles connecting to America, but... when I did, I've had some people from Europe call in, and they didn't seem to have much of a trouble, so I'm sure it's just a little bit of a delay here. If anybody's listening out there, feel free to call in, and, oh, I think this is her. Let's see. Hello?
Hey, Frank. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
Finally. I was missing a one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sometimes you got to dial one out here.
Yeah, no, I had to put three ones in. It was baffling.
Oh, yeah. I was kind of like grappling at books in the dark, trying to read something to buy time.
Well, that's so great. Good choice.
How are you out there on a Tuesday afternoon in Australia? How's Tuesday, by the way? Is Tuesday okay? Because I'm still in Monday.
Yeah, no, Tuesdays. Tuesday's pretty good. You'll like it when you get here. How are you? It's been ages. I haven't spoken to you for a really long time.
It's been a few years since we talked. It's been quite a while. Well, I mean, it isn't exactly cheap to, like, call each other and stuff from, like, Australia and America. You know, it's kind of, I think it's, like, about 5,000 miles away. But, so how's the weather out there in December?
Yeah, it's usually really hot, and instead today we've got rain and grey skies, and yeah, it's pretty, you know, it's still humid, but yeah, a bit miserable, really.
Oh, it's like complete opposite where I am. It's like zero right now, and there's snow, and the trees are frozen with ice on them, so.
Yeah, wow, yeah.
Is it winter for you guys, like, when it's summer for us?
No, it's summer. We're the opposite of you. It's summer in Australia. So we have hot Christmases. I think last year they were in the 40s, which I don't know what that is
awesome.
In Fahrenheit. That's Celsius. It's hot.
That's pretty cool, man. So you're gearing up for the holidays?
Yeah. Well, I just spent sort of a large part of the last 5 months under a Tuit tree with a bunch of people trying to stop it being knocked down. So I'm actually kind of enjoying just being in a house for a while.
Wait, did you just say that you were just living in a tree for 5 months?
Yeah, I had a fantastic crew of people all camped out under a tree with me, trying to stop it being cut down. Luckily, pretty close to my house, but yeah, it was pretty hilarious. It was on land owned by BP, and the developer that was trying to knock it down was actually a member of the Italian mafia. So it made for a really exciting 4 months. And that was winter. That was through the wildest, darkest, coldest parts of winter.
Did you have, like, Italian leg breakers coming to try to remove you from the tree that you were living in?
No. Threats of firebombing my house and all sorts of goodies. But, yeah, it was interesting.
Well, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, we sort of move things around a bit when you're feeling a little bit complacent, you know, find something else to do. It was interesting.
So I've got to ask, since but before we get into all the poetry, I noticed on your photos, what's with all the birds? Because I love birds. Or is it just one bird?
I've got one right now. I've got a red-tailed black cockatoo, which is an endangered species, living in my bedroom at the moment. It belongs to someone else, but it's been staying here. Although a really good Irish friend of mine said, I've got to stop telling people I've got a cockatoo in my bedroom. Especially with an Australian accent. There's a really dreadful kind of 90s parody song that came out here by someone called Ostentatious, and in the middle of it he says, you know, I bet she's seen a cockatoo. Anyway,
I know what you meant.
Stop telling people I've got a big black cockatoo in my bedroom.
I know what you meant, but now you say it is kind of funny with the Australian accent that you got a big black cockatoo.
Yeah, you've got to have the full-blown Australian accent for it, yeah.
So what has been going on in the world of writing or poetry for you? Anything?
Yeah, well, I've been writing a bit about trees and cockatoos. And all sorts of other things, you know, strange personal dynamics that happen underneath trees and bits and pieces. But Yeah, and a couple of things coming out in the next wee while. I've got, hopefully some of my rural kind of, I don't know, weird poems that I wrote years ago about shooting little animals and things, which have been sort of tucked away, are coming back out. But, slowly, slowly getting it all happening again. I've been fairly quiet for a while. Do you want me to read a poem?
Before you read that, was that the cockatoo screaming in the background?
Yeah, that would be the cockatoo screaming in the background. I wake up at the moment at 5 a.m. every morning with her playing honky nut soccer. Like, we have these gum nuts that we call honky nuts. They're these little hard nuts, and cockatoos eat them. So I've got, like, a fairly large supply of them, you know, in my room, and the cockatoo gets up at 5 o'clock every morning and starts chasing them around really loudly. It's great.
Okay.
She's becoming more endangered every morning.
Well, that can be a segue into whatever poem you're going to decide to read now.
Yeah, I might do one that I wasn't actually thinking of reading, just because I've reached down and picked it up and opened it, and I like it. I don't think there's any birds in it. This is one of the orchid poems from my orchid poems book that came out last year through Mulla Mulla Press here in Australia. This one's called Linguiform Orchid, and it's dedicated to Robert Adamson, who a couple of lines in it came from one of his poems that I really love. And there's a cockatoo. In the clean dark, kissing from her toes into the little wings of her cunt. Inspiration in stages. Our toes meted nerve, tormented silence of a garden petaling its way over rocks, going feral, like his calm love overarching words. In the hive, bees lick mould from each other's eyes, dancing their maps, being eaten by possums. Here, they say, wash your hands and mouth before prayer, clap twice, then blow the gauze from the mountains.
Oh, nice.
And that's that.
That was great. It's funny, it's because,
yeah,
like, I think you're about the third non-American poet that I've interviewed, which I totally like doing. Like, I've done Australia and England and Canada, and sometimes, like, the accent doesn't really bother me, like, because I've had one guest that was like, can you understand what I'm saying? Do you understand? Yeah, just keep reading. I can understand what you're saying perfectly. You're speaking English. It might be different if you were Chinese. But I just like to say that if anyone would like to call in, there are listeners, but if anyone wants to call in, feel free to do so and ask a question. We usually have sometimes people call in and sometimes they are shy, so we'll see. But so you got future plans, like any future books in the future coming out?
There's a couple of things kind of in the pipeline. There's a little ebook sort of coming soon, and a couple of other books that have been in the pipeline for probably about a year, and now I've had 6 months under a tree, so they're taking a little bit longer again. But
I'd be really curious,
different, I suppose.
I'd be really curious to hear about Italian mobsters trying to firebomb your house while you live under a tree. That kind of makes for some interesting reading.
Yeah, I'm sure the Tulip Poems book will come eventually. There's been a few of them written. I've read a couple of them at readings recently, so eventually the whole thing will come out, I guess.
Why don't you give us another poem, another poem, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, sure. I'm just thinking I'll do another orchid poem, just because the book's here and it's got little bookmarks in it from last time I read. This is called Risenthaler Gardener. Risenthaler Gardener is an orchid, a West Australian orchid that's endangered. And, anyway, this is a poem that's probably got a bit to do with it, not a huge amount. Sequestered in earth, invisible flowering, truffled to fungus in wet dark. Sniff past the ground, see past the crack in the soil. Incise with fingertips the parted dirt to find the threatened orchid, sessile and yawning, breath like honey. He rolls away from her and the smell of them puffs from the sublayer of sheets. Meeting places of bodies wet and sticky shrink back in the quiet away from the heat. Sound sinks deep into their inner ears. These hours are torn from their timeline, her heart from its shape, her bare hands from their image. She is speaking inside herself, and each word burns long enough to close his back in what she can't contain. Slow speed of night, moving into the unseen deadline of morning, like a tongue into a mouth, stroking language.
Whoa. That's a great ending.
Yeah,
it was just like abrupt. I'm a fan of sometimes abrupt endings. Sometimes people can carry it on,
and like
it just sometimes it just needs to stop.
Painful,
sometimes. So here's like one of the dull questions that I usually ask. But when did this all like come about? Were you like always writing when you were younger, or did it come later in life?
Yeah, no, I've always written. I mean, I went into some sort of writing denial for years. I studied sculpture, and while I was studying, I kept realizing that a lot of the installations and art pieces I was doing were really text-dependent anyway. But what I wasn't telling anyone was that for every installation, I was probably writing about 4 or 5 poems to come up with maybe 3 images to use in a piece anyway. So, like, I was using writing poetry as a way of distilling whatever I was trying to say down into some, you know, smaller particle that I could kind of reconstitute as a sculpture and as an installation. And eventually I started pulling all of the poems back out and going, oh, yeah, some of them are actually okay. So from that, I started writing again and, for the sake of an actual finished poem, and then slowly started sharing it, which was probably where I had contact with you, when I started actually sharing poetry online and through the social media. And there was that really interesting kind of networking stage where we were all reading each other's writing and responding to it, which was actually quite generative. It was a bit like, kind of being in a kind of collective again. It was really, quite a good time to give me a kick up the bum and get me started actually, finishing pieces off instead of leaving these little kind of sprawling, dismembered, kind of disemboweled half poems all over the place.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how like a bunch of people met way back in the day, like 6 or 7 years ago on MySpace, and like how so many people just vanished, but now there's like some people that are still around and they're like putting out books and stuff, and it's kind of like not the way it was, like, it was in MySpace when we'd all read that. Like, people are putting books out now, and they're some good books and stuff. I think that's
kind of interesting development.
Kind
of other way around, a lot of the really established writers discovering social media and discovering blogging and things too, and the huge generosity that kind of comes with that of having access to all these really amazing established artists sort of sharing stuff online too.
Do you think like that?
Fantastic.
Oh man, what was I going to say? Do you think that I forget what I was going to say. It'll come back. Why don't you give us another poem? And,
what time
it'll
is
come
it
back
there?
Look,
that's what I was wondering actually. You've probably
What's
got a
that?
Whole different thing going on. What time is it there?
Oh, it's 10:30 at night.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, it's kind of, I'm in the middle of the day, lunchtime kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm in central time, so it's... No, I'm not tired at all. I run on a strange schedule. I just kind of sleep when I want to. So, but yeah, no, what I was going to ask was, I was kind of shocked to find out when I was talking to some people in Europe on the show that they said that, because my perception was that writing was, of course, different, but much bigger in Europe than it was in America, because America's got a very dumbed-down sensibility about it. And but I was shocked to hear that it really wasn't, that a lot of Europe has become westernized in many ways, even the culture and the art. So is this true with Australia, or do you guys really cherish it still, or is there like a lot of westernized pop culture down there too?
I think it's all a bit much for much. I mean, we here, as a kind of post-colonial white society, are a very young, it's a really young country. I mean, there's an indigenous culture that's, absolutely ancient. But for us, there's a real sense of newness and discovery, and I suppose at the same time a re-understanding of this kind of reverence for, what an amazing place Australia is too. But, here we've got, or Western Australia in particular, it's a mining boom state. Like, it's suddenly, they've sort of taken on this boomtown moniker, and we're really subject to the winds, or the people with the most power in this state at the moment are mining magnates. So within that, you've got a really strong arts culture that's really fighting to be heard and noticed and seen and acknowledged and sponsored in different ways. But it's a bit of a strange cowboy canvas to be working in as well.
Yeah, the times are definitely changing. It's definitely, like a lot of people say, it's not. But of course, I would say a lot of the American culture is very pop oriented, but it's because it's owned by media and everything that people see. But there also underneath it, there's a I think a lot of like interesting poets and painters that are happening right now. And I think with the way things are in America, the time is to grab it now. And I think that maybe like you guys, we will also thrive. I hope so.
Yeah. But, I think, here there's a real chance to, there's a real feeling that it's not that difficult to find an authentic voice, because, we don't have a huge legacy of, well-known poets from centuries ago, because there just wasn't, white culture or even a written culture here centuries ago. Or, it's all a bit new and a bit exciting. I mean, there's certainly some amazing heritage of great poetry that, has been written here, but really... Yeah, it's young. I mean, Australia's only, really a couple of hundred years old as a white, white settlement. So, we're pretty fresh.
Yeah. So on that note, give us another poem.
Okay. Which one will I do? I'll do one I haven't done for ages, and... because we're talking about old European writers. It starts with an epigram from Shakespeare that just says, "But our cold maids do dead men's fingers call them." It's called Early Purple Orchid. Unsure new lover grins, and name after name is lost from her open mouth. Rooted in clean air of moon theatre, ruined epiphyte, is it how she unmakes the bed, how she undresses in the cold? Mimicry of wasp and spider, lost calling. She almost holds his hand, almost pulled his hair in back in her fist. Snarl deep throated aggregate, can't incant blue, exile in darkness. Her body is full of empty chambers, trailing fingertips, maggot death stench steeped in warm goat's milk to make love filter, barely touched becomes whisper. The end.
Nice, another abrupt ending that I like. I like something that I'm curious about is that I've noticed in the difference between, which is not always true, because there's definitely a lot more there's definitely a lot of language poets, and of course I myself do like to write language poems sometimes, but what's popular here is narrative poems, and I don't see that as much in a European or Australian writers. Is it, do you have more of a heritage of language poems?
I'd say there's a fairly good mix. I mean, there's still some amazing writers here whose focus is still coming out of the language poets, but there's a lot of really wonderful young female writers in Australia who are quite beautiful lyrical poets, and there's some really interesting stuff coming out of them. I write quite a bit of lyrical poetry as well, but and a lot of narrative. But I suppose it depends on what I'm writing about. At the moment, I've got a series of poems I'm doing that are on loosely based on the idea of migratory paths of animals, but they kind of take in lots of different things like drift lines and things. And there's probably less narrative involved in those ones than in a lot of my other stuff. So
that's cool.
Yeah,
I'm just curious. Like,
you are what you're immersed in.
I like the, I've always enjoyed it all, because my bookshelf just has anything from narrative to lyrical to haiku to whatever. I just like good stuff.
I've always loved that about you too.
So I'm not like, I can't just like, we all have our favorite writers alive and dead, but I just like to like read anything. But then there's that one time you read something and you're like, oh, I don't like this. But now I remember what I was going to ask. You said you were studying sculpture. Is that like something else you do, or you just mainly stick with writing as an art form?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I went from when I was studying sculpture, I got to the point where I really it just seemed really arrogant to be leaving more crap around the place. And so my sculptures got more and more minimal, and then I started just doing installation work where I'd work within an architectural space, or, it was all site-specific, and then it'd be dismantled at the end and gone, and there'd be documentation or not. And I think at the end of it, I suddenly realised that that whole act was in a way kind of superfluous, and that it was a lot more reverent and temporal to just have the words there in cyberspace. Originally, I intended never to put anything on paper either, but to have the things there in cyberspace, and then if I wanted them to be gone, then they would be gone. And then it's interesting that on the back of that, with all the best intentions of having something I could completely delete at any time, the National Library here archived my website, and then on top of that I started putting books out as well. But it seemed a logical progression. It still seems a logical progression to go from not wanting to clutter up things with more stuff to just having words, which was the place that I would always start from to arrive at an image anyway.
Oh, that's cool.
So.
Yeah, it's not like me who I have no skills outside of writing. I can draw you a mean stick figure or paint you a square on a canvas. Well, next time that I ever send you anything, I'll make sure I draw a stick figure.
Yeah, well, you know, you've said it on radio now. It'll have to. You can't get out of it.
Well, it's an interesting thing that, like, all these shows are, like, archived for, like, eternity. And I've been doing this show since last April, and it ends in April. And then my, like, blog talk or radio show and thing is over. I'm done with it. Time to move on to something else. But I think it's, like, kind of cool that each one of you that I do is, like, archived for eternity. So, you know, someday, 20 years from now, someone might go, oh, I'd like to hear Amanda Joy's radio show from 2012. You know, so it's just always there.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's hard not to leave a footprint. I spent a long time trying not to have, you know, any sort of name to anything or ownership or authorship or, but, I think I've resigned myself to this being the way things sort of sit.
Well, if you remember,
read another poem. Is that a good point to read a poem?
Yes, go for it. You can read another poem.
All right, this one just seemed appropriate. This is Taxidermy. I can hold my tongue, and then we make so much use of rocks, and then who first thought to break them down into their elements? When did we start to think we are stardust? Sequence of events, and then what can be made from a heart without a body or vice versa? And then when I asked you to take my place, you asked if I was here to stay. I wasn't sure if I was forgotten or lost. Time is colourless, and then I think I once swallowed a day whole without thinking. And then these ways we avoid fullness. Here I will make another void for someone else's ghost. A window holds a sky. A valley shapes a reservoir. A body is its organs. Deep places hold water longer.
Nice. That's a great ending, too. You're like the master of endings. Like, you tie it all in
the abrupt
quite well.
Endings, so, like an amputation. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's like a balloon, and, like, you, like, have all this stuff inside, and you, like, tie it off at the end, or I don't know if that's a good analogy, but makes sense to me. And you're like, well, yeah, I like great endings. I've always, like, you know, like, the poet James Wright, he's, like, such a fantastic, like, granted, he's been dead a long time, but just a fantastic endings. Like, you know, and, I don't know. I like going through a journey and then having a great ending. I'm a fan of it. But
it's interesting, that choice of how you're going to end something, whether it's up in the air or whether you know. I think a lot of people feel the need to explain things in that last line. It's kind of nice sometimes to just sort of not do that. It's something I was doing a while ago with, you know, I really like swapping stanzas around at that point where you feel like something's finished.
Well, you explain it in like a way that it can be understood. It's not like you end the poem with like blue light druid face of warrior, like, and it's just like, I'm like, what the hell is this ending and what does it mean? So, I mean, I understand what your endings mean. Sometimes, like I don't know if they're called, like, surrealist poets or whatever have you, and I don't understand. Like, I got into a journey myself like that for a few years. I'm so glad that I've finished that journey. But I just, you just don't, like, understand it. Like, chicken leg light bulb. And I'm like, what does that mean?
I like a good abstract poem, though, too. I've got some quite abstract poems, but I've never worked out what to do with them other than sort of leave them floating around in cyberspace and things.
There's a fan base for them. There's definitely a fan base for them of abstract poets. There's definitely some out there. I mean, I was a failure at abstract poetry. I don't, you know, but I don't know. Whatever. So, if anybody in the listening realm wanted to inquire about Amanda Joy books or where they can find you in reviews or anything of that nature, how would they do so?
Yeah, I've just done a massive cull on Facebook and gotten rid of, I had a bit of an open door policy for a while where if anyone sort of sent me something and said they liked poetry or my poetry or anything, I just, you know, pressed okay. So I found I had all sorts of people in there that I actually had no contact with and I wasn't quite sure what they were doing. So, you know, there's room on Facebook as long as you entertain me a bit. Otherwise, I mean, my blog's still up there floating around. I haven't added to it for a while, but I've made a promise to myself, yeah, that I would start doing that again. Otherwise, Mulla Mulla Press is a really good one to look up. They put out my orchid poems. I'm not sure if she's got any of those left anymore. But, yeah, there'll be a bit of stuff coming up over the next while. But probably the Little Glass Pen blog's still the one to keep an eye out when I start to have a bit of a cyber presence. I imagine that's where it's going to be again.
Well, I got a good answer on a show I did a couple of weeks ago, and I asked them, well, how could they find any of your poetry? And they're just like, you know what Google is, right? Use it. So I just got the direct.
I could have said that too.
It's all these like wonderful search engines because like even 20 years ago when I was like in high school, there was none of this stuff. You had to go to the library or go to the city and find out about it. Like, you know, you couldn't just simply sit at home and press Google and instantly have an Amanda Joy blog or book at your fingertips.
Yeah. Well, it's still, and I've still got MySpace is still floating around out there like some abandoned kind of shipwreck. So I think there's still some of my stuff up on there too, but I haven't been on there for quite a while.
Yeah, I think everybody abandoned ship from that. The pirates took over MySpace.
Yeah,
it don't exist anymore.
Yeah, I think Googling's probably the way to go. I mean, there's still journals and things out there with stuff in and anthologies, I suppose, and bits and pieces you can find things in. Do you want another
poem? So, yes, go into another one.
All right, this is... Yes, thinking of abstract poems. This is Vasilisa's Doll. I am the house and the hut with chicken legs that turns to face us. I am the sea cave speared through by foundations of skyscrapers, the glitter and shine of bare bones, the scaffolding and crane, the tented buildings, the outskirts of forest with trees bent like ribs, strange enough without shadows. Here I am, one hand in yours, the other searching for skeleton keys in the soft cloth of her unwritten pocket. Private finger cave of receipts, crumbs, stones and small change. Here is the dull-eyed doll who comes to life at night, feeding my cheeks of milk and blood as my hair grows down to my waist. I like to tell you this story, you, keeper of water and all the paths it makes when trapped. Bent forward in your chair like the red rider, have asked me to close my eyes and feel the quiver. Sarah ha, ha ha, I laugh, I know you're winging it. This is grown in the dark too, in the chambers of involuntary muscle, and it will go one way or another. I am picking the black grains from the wheat. When you tap me on the shoulder, I turn to nothing.
See, now I can say it's abstract, but I could understand that. Maybe I was just an utter complete failure at abstract poetry. I can see the images in my head, but I don't know.
Yeah, no, that was probably... Yeah, that one, I think, it did actually make it into a book, I think. The ones that I probably love the most are always the ones that people say, oh, you know, you could probably leave that one out.
Well, everybody's got those.
Yeah, you could probably reconsider reading that one at your next poetry reading. But they're all the ones that I really love, too. So, yeah, that one's probably... bit more accessible.
So are you giving readings around your area, or do you have like a group of people that give readings? I mean, how does it work there?
Yeah, there's heaps of readings around Perth, really. I mean, they're slowing down at the moment, and I've had some really, really good nights recently where visiting musicians have asked to have poets reading with them, which has worked really well because people come, you know, mainly for the music, and then they're sort of exposed to poetry unwittingly, and invariably, like, people come up at the end and go, oh, that was really amazing. Like, I don't go to poetry readings, or I'm not into poetry, but that was fantastic. You know, we did, I was asked last year, this year, to take a group of 9 poets down to a music festival here, and we were given, I think we were given 2 hours at some ungodly hour of the morning. It was like, I think it was 10 o'clock in the morning at a music festival. You can imagine what it's like getting the poets up, unless they've stayed up all night. But, you know, getting everyone up and getting them to read poetry. And we got a lot of the, you know, I knew a lot of musicians there. So I asked them to get up and either read their lyrics as poems, or read a poem that's inspired them, or a poem they've written. And people just loved it. So we're doing that again next year. So we had Saturday and Sunday mornings, you know, at Fairbridge Festival. We'll be, there'll be 9 poets again, and a bunch of musos trying to get up really hungover and perform at 10 o'clock. But that was fun. That was really fun, apart from the hangovers. And
wait, you're having poets perform at 10 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, 10 o'clock in the morning. And the best thing was, like, it was in the dining hall. It was hilarious. You know, I ran into a friend a couple of months ago, and they said, oh, you know, I really love those poetry breakfasts down at Fairbridge. But, you know, my friend said, oh, you know, it's really hard to sit and eat your eggs while someone's reading a poem about vaginas. And I went, God, was there really poems about vaginas? No one I know would have put the word vagina in a poem. Anyway, it was it was good. It sort of asked a bit of the audience, which we're an audience that I don't think we're used to being asked a lot of. It was, you know, traditionally Fairbridge, the poetry breakfast, were bush poets. So here, you know, you have the bush poets, who are these poets who rhyme, everything rhymes, and it's all very Australian and big, broad Australian accents. And you know, it's terrible to generalise, but, you know, they do tend to have quite long, grey, bushy beards, and, you know, sort of write a lot about, you know, being at the pub and things. So a lot of people had kind of come expecting that, and instead got a bunch of, you know, contemporary poets and some, you know, really great musos who all had probably tied one on quite nicely the night before, and, you know, put their pants on back to front and climbed on stage and, you know, performed fantastically, I might add. But yeah, anyway, so that was the best reading I've had for a while. That was great. We managed to do it both mornings, and we managed to be fairly awake, and yeah, I think only one person dropped the microphone off the stage, or, you know, did anything to untoward.
Well, that's cool. So why don't you give us another poem? We're winding down on the last 10 minutes.
All right. I'll find... I should have had something else open. Oh, I think I did, and then I closed it. I'll read an older one. I haven't read this for ages. This is called To Applause, and it came from... it came from a note someone gave me that just said, for someone in love with words, it amazes me how fast you can move to be free of them. Having been accused in the past of lying, she is mute. Now she repeats certain movements all day, etching each moment into the musculature of her body as proof. He admires her form. He writes to her of it in angular words. She places the softly crumpled sheets of paper over her body and strikes a match. In each moment, she still feels the hundreds of fingertips which have explored her histories only to become them. He asks her questions of corruption and tenderness. There are no answers. He will come to understand dissolution as she traces each vertebrae of his spine with her tongue. With each calm stroke warmly welcomed, she smiles and gifts him the strength to leave her.
Right after she licked his vertebrae?
It's an act of great generosity, I believe.
No, that was a good one. So you got any big plans here on the holidays? Going to spend it with friends and family, or what's going on?
Yeah, no, I tend to Christmas Day now. You know, sort of family dues are always a little bit stressful. So what I tend to do now is just spend the whole day at my house and leave the door open, and if anyone feels like coming in with champagne or food or a foot massage, then, you know, they know where to find me.
Wow, hey.
So that's the plan. You know, I might extend myself far enough to blow up the little paddle pool and put some water in it, but that'll be the full extent of the exertion for Christmas. And,
wow, that sounds like an awesome Christmas. You just open the door and say, bring food, and put massages, and you can come in.
Oh, and I found this, I've got this fantastic new drink I've just discovered, which is vanilla vodka mixed with rose water. So, you know, if anyone feels like dropping by with that too, they're welcome. I have put a call out. What about you, Frank? What are you having a big break over Christmas? Yeah,
no, it's just us two, and that's good. There's no family within thousands of miles in each direction. So basically, we get up, we open some presents, we eat some food, we drink beer. that's a lot of fame. Yeah, like it's not a big to-do like Christmas used to be years ago. You know, I used to have to like travel to like 40 different people's houses just in one day, and I don't like doing that kind of stuff no more.
Yeah.
So we are down to like the last like 5 minutes. So you want to like take us out with a poem?
I'll do a short one, and then I'll do an older one as well. Is that a good idea?
Okay, yeah.
All right, this is Onion Orchid. In the drought among spat-out seeds of patient grasses, full-bladded abundance of orchid, mouthless thirst, green-flowered, last one to be exhausted, watching the wind shift the red dirt around. Marsupial mice feed on shooting stars, and we know there's moisture in each other's mouths, and they say water is tasteless. So that's Onion Orchid. So that was all from Orchid Poems, pretty much. And this is another older one that when we were talking about amputations at the end of poems, I suddenly thought of this one, only because the epigram's from Irigaray, and it just says, don't let any parts of us be amputated that could be expansive for us. It's called On Warmth. Coming back, a map can be heard in a hive song of wings to follow with soft, dark feet. I have positioned my chair about 2 metres behind the others, the legs push deep into the turf. Your hair is longer, more grey, your lips thinner, a less dramatic sideshow. I follow your breath by the lift and drop of your shoulders, the finger tracing the podium. The sun throbs behind my lobes, and I am too far for your words. Just outside my reach, I imagine skeins, some transparent consonants stretching towards me. Divest of their meaning, I could touch them, just the sensation of an S whistled through the abacus of your teeth, resting on my fingertips. I spread my hands upwards, on my knees to catch them, the mathematics of your sound. And later in bed, when you ask me what I thought, I touch your lips, lean forward to push my tongue into your mouth, into the swarm.
Hey.
And that's me.
Oh. Brian Fugier out there in the listening world says that you seduced him with your poetry. No. But anyway, so yeah, it was awesome having you on, and I want to wish you a happy holidays, and I'm sure I'll be talking to you soon. We're running out of time here, but I'm so glad that you came on.
Yeah, no, me too. Good to talk to you again after so long, Frank, and lots of love to you and April over Christmas.
Yeah, you do. I'll be talking to you soon. Don't be a stranger this time. I know, I understand you live under trees sometimes, but don't be a stranger this time.
Excellent. All right, bye.
All right.
Ciao.
Bye. And that was Amanda Joy out of Australia. If you like her stuff, Google it, the Orchid Poems, and she has some stuff coming out in the future. She's on Facebook. If you don't know her, contact her. You can go through me. She's on my page. And we won't be around for a few weeks. Like I said earlier, next week is Christmas Eve. I'm not doing a show. The week after, I'm not doing a show because it's New Year's Eve. I'll probably be drinking lots of beer with April and, you know, drinking out old Fezziwig. So, anyhow, we will be returning, I believe it's January 7th, with our first guest of the year, Zarina Zbyrski, reading selections from her book out of Epic Rights Press, Iron, and whatever the hell else she wants to read. So, happy fucking holidays, and drink the spiked eggnog, and be so drunk that you fall into your parents' tree and it falls over and you have to pick it up and apologize. You know, I guess that's what the holidays are for now. Lots of beer and laughter and music and giving a shit about those that, whatever, you know, what the fuck ever. Merry Christmas.